Military personnel heading to the Persian Gulf must confront many fears. Some worry about facing biological, nuclear, or chemical weapons, or about possible side effects of vaccines. A growing number are going to commercial cryogenic banks to freeze their sperm. They see it as a kind of insurance policy against uncertain threats, a way to protect their legacy in case they are injured, rendered infertile, or killed in combat. Fred Mogul of member station WNYC has more.
To deploy for war is to consider mortality. Lieutenant Sean O'Donnell, a military police reservist, has been mobilized, and that's why he's entrusting his DNA, and perhaps the future of his family, to a sperm bank.
It's being somewhat cautious that, God forbid, something does take place, and whatever that may be, it was just something that we were looking at as a long-term family care issue.
O'Donnell and his girlfriend, Kimberly Jones, live in Greenwich, Connecticut, and they hope to get engaged and then married after his deployment. Freezing his sperm was her idea. She saw a story on TV.
And it got me thinking and started bothering Sean about it. I just thought, you know, this is something that's important. Other people are doing it, and there must be a reason for it. And then he kind of took it from there.
Judging from an informal survey of sperm banks around the country, hundreds, maybe thousands, of deploying soldiers are taking this precaution. Soldiers, not the military, pay for the procedure, and costs can exceed $1,000 for collecting, testing, and depositing sperm for the first year of storage. O'Donnell used the Mays Laboratories in White Plains, New York. Here the sperm is kept in what looks like a large space-age milk can, an insulated storage container filled with neatly shelved vials of semen that are immersed in liquid nitrogen to minus 196 degrees Celsius.
Everything in life has, you know, risks and benefits.
Dr. Michael Werner runs the Mays facility. He doesn't say all Gulf-bound soldiers should bank sperm, just those who want peace of mind and can afford the procedure.
If someone came to me and said, is this something that I must do, I wouldn't have an answer. I mean, because I really don't know what the risks are. And since it is rest benefits, you know, it's a fairly benign procedure. And so it's just time, energy, sperm, you know, and finances are, you know, the only things that limit them.
Before depositing a sperm sample, the man must sign a contract either naming a beneficiary or stating it should be destroyed if he dies. Physicians and lab managers say most couples who come in have already discussed this worst-case scenario. Bioethicist Adrian Ash says couples should talk about what it might mean to produce a child without a living father.
Not only without a father, but when the father was never there at the time of the procreative act, as it were. How will you explain that to a child? How will a child feel about it? How will the wife feel about it, or a girlfriend? What does she think she is doing when she's not giving the child a relationship with someone, but only someone's genetic material? Is there a kind of false hope that the child will embody some features of this dead person? She or he might, but she or he might not.
Ash, a Wellesley College professor, recognizes these are difficult, emotional discussions, but thinks that's why couples should try to think rationally about the ethical and psychological issues.
People really need to know as clearly as they can in advance what both of them feel and why they feel it. Saying, well, she can sort it out later is making too light of what's going on. It's too important to imagine creating life or helping to create life.
Sean O'Donnell and Kimberly Jones have discussed the subject intensely with each other and their family and friends. Together, they have decided what Kimberly should do if Sean should die in the line of duty. But they aren't telling anyone their decision. Preserving the potential for posterity in frozen vials may add some new options and assurances. But as Professor Ash says, perhaps the best part of all new reproductive technologies is that they force prospective parents to think and talk about what having children really means. For NPR News, I'm Fred Mogul in New York.